Hey guys, this is Hunter Levine, and thank you for listening to the Captain's Collective podcast, brought to you by Skinny Water Culture, Turtle Box Audio, Costa Sunglasses, All Hands Vodka, and Orvis Fly Fishing. The past few years, I've been able to travel more and see some pretty amazing places and meet some even better people. This past Thanksgiving, I got the chance to spend some time fishing for trout with my father and some of our friends at the Cahutta Fishing Company in Blue Ridge, Georgia. This little town is located near the state's northern border, and it has become one of our favorite quick getaways. In this podcast, I sit down with Drew Frederick and Matt Morrison and discuss how they try to help best develop anglers. We also dive into how to make the most out of visiting Blue Ridge, including a few restaurant recommendations and a karaoke bar. We hope that you enjoy our time together. Thank you for listening. This is the Captain's Collective.
I'll say it's anything you choose, I think it picks you. You know, it's genetic.
Let everything else stop in the world and just be quiet. And it's amazing where your mind goes at that point and where it doesn't go. And sometimes just that quiet space is what we need, and especially in this day and age.
If you have a fly rod in your hand, it's this tool that takes you to beautiful places. You meet hopefully wonderful people, and it's just this cherry on top of this outdoor adventure.
When the fish is coming, that shot within a shot, that timer start. Beep, 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 beep,
beep, beep. No one else knew anything anyway, and you just might definitely making it up as you're going along. But
so what Grandpa and Dad would tell me is like, all right, where's the old big trout laying out there? Where's his shaving cream on the water? Where's he been shaving this morning at? So look for his shaving cream on the water, and that's where he's going to be.
Well, awesome. Hey, guys, thanks for making some time today. We're pre-Thanksgiving, and we're hanging out in Blue Ridge, Georgia. I'm on a father-son pre-Thanksgiving fishing trip. Excited to head out with Matt tomorrow and do a little float trip here. But we wanted to carve out just a little bit of time today to sit down with some of our friends at Cahutta Fly Fishing Company. Round two sitting down here in this dungeon. In this fly-tying dungeon where they got a fake window behind me to try to disorient you. But man, what a great place, what a beautiful city, and I'm looking forward to having you guys on. Can you guys just give a quick introduction of kind of who you are and what you do here at Cahutta? We'll start with Matt.
Hey, I'm Matt Morrison. I'm one of the guides here at Cahutta Fishing Company.
I'm Drew Friedrich. I am the guide service manager, and I also guide for Cahutta Fishing Company.
So when people get mad and they ask to speak to the manager,
that would be me.
You talk them off the edge. So give me a little bit, let's start with you, Matt, but just give me a little bit of background of how does somebody become a fishing guide at an outfitter in Blue Ridge, Georgia?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of one of those things I never really expected to do. Like, I didn't think about it really my whole life till all of a sudden I was kind of, you know, how about being a fishing guide? And I was fishing a lot and kind of just walked into Cahutta Fishing Company. Didn't really instantaneously go in there and be like, hey, you hiring? But was talking with Connor, the old manager, and was kind of talking to him just about fishing, you know, just really just talking. And kind of just asked, hey, you know, I kind of just came in kind of looking to get into the industry. And, you know, he kind of liked, I guess, what I was talking about. And, you know, yeah, man, just sent a resume, and, you know, a few weeks later, came in, started working in the Blue Ridge shop, and would go down and help out in Cartersville every now and then.
So for you, did you start fishing as a kid, or how did you get into
it? Yeah, you know, I grew up in Chattanooga, fishing like Lake Chickamauga over there for bass. Grew up on the lake, you know, would go out there in the afternoons, just, you know, bass, plastic worms, really just whatever. And started out doing that when I was pretty young, and you know, Chattanooga sits in a valley. There's a bunch of little creeks and stuff over there. And learned to fly fish when I was pretty young. I think I was like 8 or 9. Really just learned to cast. Didn't really know any of the fishing side of it besides, you know, just casting out a woolly bugger and stripping it back. Getting bluegill to hit little dry flies or nymphs, you know, just doing that. And over the years doing that, you know, you just kind of start building the skill base with the cast and presentation kind of stuff. And with all those creeks over there, they're super clear water creeks, and you know, they're full of bass and sunfish, and you just go out there and mess around with them. And started doing so much of that, and really I didn't really start trout fishing a ton until I could drive. I'd go on maybe a vacation every now and then, maybe up to the mountains and fish like Teleco, places like that. And would kind of trout fish a little bit. Still, you know, I'd bring a rooster tail or something with me and a fly rod with me. You know, I was still pretty young. And when I could drive, that's when I really started messing around with trout on a fly rod and just kept doing it. And didn't really think about being a guide till I was working nights at UPS and had so much, you know, I had weekends off and the days off. So I'd drive up and go fish for a bit and was doing that a lot. And that's when I, you know, started getting pretty good at it and was teaching all my friends how to do it too. Like my dad didn't know how to do it. My none of my friends knew how to do it. And so I was kind of just, you know, kind of taught them and brought them along with it with me. I had two friends that really kind of started liking it. And, kind of just was going off on weekends and stuff on my own fishing, and it kind of ended up here. That's when I decided to make the choice.
So you're doing UPS night shifts. What did that look like?
Hard. It sucked.
What, I mean, you're just unloading boxes from
8 p.m. basically moving boxes from a conveyor belt into a truck. You'd get three trucks and pack them as tight as you can, really.
What are the hours like on a night shift?
It was usually like 11 to 8 or 9, and then like Sundays were like 9 to 9, something like that. And when it pretty much was going there to be a UPS truck driver. And kind of glad I went ahead and made the decision to switch. I didn't like working nights at all. I'd say the biggest plus with that was being able to actually, you know, go fish in the morning when you got off, or, you know, you'd have the weekends. And really just kind of hated it, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but I
kind of wanted something different.
Yeah, I bring that up though because I've met people that work nights and it opened up a really good opportunity for them to learn fisheries. Yeah. But I've always been curious how people manage their time and sleep.
It's terrible sleeping during the day. You just feel bad.
Yeah.
You get disconnected.
But you could go fish and then sleep like lunch to work or something like that.
Yeah.
Or...
yeah, like I'd probably usually how I would do it is either I would go fish a creek. I lived like 10 minutes from a smallmouth creek and would go mess around with those. And I'd go do that for a couple hours and sleep, or I would go home and sleep a little bit. And then I would just go fish. Like if it was a weekend or something, I'd go home, sleep, and then I'd just go fish. I'd run, like, especially once I could drive, that's when I would spend some time. Like I'd go up to Hiwassee River and go fish it for the last half of the day or so, because you don't really have time to make, you know, an hour and a half, 2 hour drive somewhere to go fish for trout, you know, whenever you're working nights. And so I'd really just do that on the weekends and wait around where I could, really.
Who taught you to fish? Because you said later on you're kind of teaching your dad the fly side of things. But
so like my dad, he bass fished a lot. So like we'd just go out there with like plastic worms and stuff, you know. We'd go out, not always catch fish, but maybe one, two on a good day more. But it really just got me into fishing. Like one of my first memories of fishing, and this is probably what's kept me into it for so long, was just catching like a 8-pound bass off of his dock. When I was little, that was one of my first fishing memories, and kind of just always stuck with, always like going fishing. He had a bass boat, so we'd go in it every now and then. Like once I kind of learned like what fly fishing was about and kind of learned what trout were, just they were just such a cool looking fish that I thought, you know, I was like, man, I want to catch one of those. And went to this camp. That's where I learned how to do the cast, and basically they would teach you how to do the cast and take you to a pond. And eventually like finally went somewhere where there were trout and fished and, you know, caught my first trout, and it was like a little brown trout, and been obsessed ever since, you know?
Yeah. And it's kind of cool hearing you talk about the camp, because I know you guys got some schools here that you do kind of similar, and we'll dive into that a little bit. But before we do that, Drew, give me the rundown. How does somebody become a fly fishing guide service manager?
Yeah, so kind of the same little story. I didn't wake up one morning when I was little and was like, man, I want to be a fishing guide. You kind of just fall right into it. But I grew up fishing my entire life. It was kind of, my grandpa obviously taught me how to fish with like a bobber and a worm, mm-hmm. whether it was at up in New York on Keuka Lake or down in Captiva fishing with pinfish. But if you go back and look at pictures of me as a little kid, 9 times out of 10, I'm fishing or holding a fish. And I grew up on the Etowah River, which is down in Cartersville. And I grew up fishing for striper and spotted bass out there. And I think I was 14 or 15. I saw somebody fly fishing. I was like, man, that looks crazy. I want to try that. So I got a rod set. I got an 8-weight setup because I was fishing for bass and striper. And it was right in my parents' backyard. I could go out anytime I wanted. And we'd go fish for a striper and spotted bass. And when I caught that first striper, I was like, oh, my God. Yeah. This is awesome.
What was? Give me the story there. What was going on?
So I used to kayak down to this little creek down river from my parents, probably about a quarter of a mile. And I would catch a bunch of hybrids during that certain time of year in this one certain spot. And one day I was kayaking down there, and there's a boat there. And I was like, oh, man, somebody beat me to it. And I start fly fishing a little bit up creek of that. And dude was like, hey, man, you got a nice cast. You ever been to Cahutta before? And I was like, yeah, I've been in there a couple times to get some flies. And I was like, you ever been there? And he's like, yeah, I own it. My name's Andy. And that's how I met Andy. And ever since then, we've been knowing each other from the river. And there's a little time where I moved out to Colorado, and I worked at the Stanley Hotel as a busboy. Mm-hmm. And anytime I wasn't working, I'd go fishing Rocky Mountain National Park. And I was really saving up money to go to Montana for this guide school. And then I got into that, and Andy heard about it. And he called me, and he's like, yeah, man, if you're interested in coming to work here, we'd love to have you. And, of course, I was, like, all about it because that was the only store I'd ever go into if I wasn't working. And then ever since then, it's been almost 8 years now, I've been with Cahutta and haven't looked back.
So, you know, I talked to whenever I interviewed Andy, I don't know, probably a year and a half ago. You know, it's interesting because not a lot of people think of Georgia as a fly fishing destination. I mean, Blue Ridge is beautiful. People obviously come here for tourism and vacation. But for you, when you're chasing opportunities to go somewhere like a Montana or Colorado or somewhere more iconic, what's so special that really brought you back here instead of chasing that down?
To be totally honest with you, it was the striper. The striper is what really brought me back. However, you've got trout here. You're not far from the coast. You can go fish for redfish. It's really kind of like a good place to be if you don't want to have to fly everywhere for these different species. Because, I mean, it's a long drive, but it's like 10 hours down catch tarpon. Or if you want to go to Apalachicola, how long is that drive from here? Not too bad.
6.5, maybe.
Yeah, so it's you're just in the center of everything. You can go do anything, whether it's trout, saltwater, anything like that. I like redfish a lot, so I'll go down to South Carolina to fish for those. But, yeah, you got a bunch of different things. Smallmouth is pretty close. We got muskie in certain areas. It's just got a little bit of everything.
So my dad's sitting here at the table too on the podcast, and he was the one that kind of arranged this drift trip that we're doing tomorrow, just because we were coming nearby. We're not having Thanksgiving here, but we're not too far. I'm curious, like, talk me through a progression of somebody kind of hitting you up for the first time. Let's say that they've never fished before. Give me a walkthrough on how you guys do things here at Cahutta to try to get everybody ready to go and set up on the perfect path.
Yeah, man. So basically it starts with somebody calling the shop, hey, we want to book a trip, and then you kind of feel them out from there. Are they looking to get into it, or are they looking to just go have fun? So our private wades and our float trips really are, they're both fun, but one's a little bit more easier than the other. Now, obviously private water, you can catch bigger fish, but that doesn't deter from the fact that you can catch really big fish on the Tocoa. Matt has been doing really good on the Tocoa lately, and he'll tell you there's some really big browns and rainbows in there. But as far as like beginner stuff, we'll tell them that you can do that private water trip, get them into it, and then we offer that on the water school if they're really into it. And that's where they'll learn and make that learning curve a little bit easier for them instead of developing more bad habits. And then they kind of go off from there by themselves and figure everything out and see what they like to do, whether it's trout or bass or redfish, snook, yada, yada, yada. But yeah, that's
Matt. Talk me through the perfect drift day. So Drew's got them all dialed in. He's taught them how to cast. He's taught them everything they need to know down here in the dungeon.
So one of the bigger differences from, let's say, like a private wade or like a creek trip versus a float is you kind of get more into that, you know, that overhead false casting. And so teaching some, really, you know, trying to dial somebody's false cast in. A lot of times, maybe even teaching them how to shoot line. That way you can get them to hit specific targets. There's not really much, you know, water load casting from a drift boat as opposed to like when you're in a small creek, you almost are forced to do that, that water load cast because you've got all these trees around. Even, you know, if there's not a tree right behind you, there's probably some branches overhanging somewhere. And so typically like that water load cast hanging downstream, lift up, drive forward, and you're out there. In a drift boat, you know, you're almost forced to really do that overhand false cast. And so, you know, that's kind of also one of those people's next step, teaching, you know, going from that water load cast, they really feel kind of what that rod's supposed to feel like. Feel that rod load up with the line and then having that line, like almost that loop lay out for you. Now, the next step is you're kind of teaching them how to do that overhead cast, watching them actually throw these loops. And that's one really cool thing about it is, especially if it's someone you've taken before, maybe on a private wade, and then taking them to a float, you've kind of got them doing the whole thing now. You know, and watching them really throw like a nice loop with that false cast is really cool, especially if it's someone you've taken before. And then also with that, having them be able to get accuracy down, hitting specific targets. You know, you're not just casting the same distance over and over, teaching them, hey, you've made that drift, let's go ahead and, you know, cast a couple feet further, you know, try to hit that next little zone. And that's one really cool thing that's about it, especially when you get someone that's done a private wade, or maybe a private wade and then on the water school. Because especially in the on the water schools, you're teaching, you know, the whole thing. But when it comes to that float trip, you're kind of putting everything together, that false cast, catching fish, as well as like the mending and everything else that you've already built upon with that private wade.
Now, what time are we getting out there tomorrow?
We'll probably meet about 9 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, nice. All right. And you guys, neither one of you guys drink coffee. Are you guys part of a cult or?
Yeah, we're part of that Celsius cult. Yeah.
I like Celsius too, man, but it's kind of cold.
That's all right. You got to embrace it.
Yeah, that's just a little out there for me, to be honest with you. But I'll have my coffee and beer and all that stuff. So we go down 9 o'clock. We're gonna launch in this river, and we're doing an 8 hour, so full day trip.
Yep.
Packing some Cuban sandwiches from what's the place called?
Rum cake lady.
Rum cake lady. Awesome. Is that the name of the restaurant, or is that just what y'all call it?
That's what it's called. And make sure you get extra cheese on it.
Okay. Extra cheese because they don't do it right the normal way, or that's what you're saying.
That's exactly what I'm saying. I like that thing.
I hope
cheesy.
She's not listening. Okay, now we're showing up. You got the gear. You got everything. We're gonna do a little bit of nymph, maybe dry fly if it's warm enough. Some throwing streamers. You were talking to me earlier about you really love doing the whole streamer game.
Yeah,
and that's something that I have basically no experience in. I've done it a couple times, but no experience in it. Talk me through that a little bit.
I'd say maybe the biggest difference with the, you know, streamers for trout versus maybe some saltwater is you got flies that are built, they're, you know, they're bulky, they've got heads that push water, and they're built to kind of swim. you know, and that's one thing, especially when you've got current involved, being able to try to make that fly swim. When you've got something that a bulky head that pushes water when you strip it, you know, it almost maybe kind of wobbles to one side or the other. Mm-hmm. You can either make them look like injured bait fish or something that's fleeing. You know, it's just something, you know, Garner said this one thing that is, it's almost like playing with a cat in a piece of string, you know? You know, it's really getting that right wiggle to it. But also along with getting that fly to swim correctly, it's also placement of it, you know, getting that fly near that log so a fish can see it, or near that boulder, mm-hmm. or deep enough into a channel where a fish can really notice it. Which there's like one stretch right now that I would streamer fish just because I've seen mm-hmm. one swimming around in there, and it's one of those. It's like, it's tough to kind of read the water, but if you like kind of pinpoint some of that brush with streamers, it can be fun. You may see something really cool.
Mm-hmm. So this time of year, you know, November, it's this morning, I think it was 29 degrees at the Airbnb that I was at, but by, you know, afternoon, it's warmed up pretty good and everything. What's your fishing season look like right now? And then when did the stripers come in? And Drew, if he doesn't know what he's talking about, as a guide manager, you can hop in. But, you know, what's this season look like in Blue Ridge?
Yeah, I mean, right now you're really just looking at trout, especially in the Toccoa. Right now you've got brown trout starting to spawn. You know, haven't been seeing a ton of reds on the river, but been seeing just a little bit of activity just where places that look like they've been fanned off by a fish or something, but nothing like real, like, okay, that, yeah, that's a trout on a red or anything mm-hmm. like that. And so the browns this time of year, they just get fired up, you know, maybe packing on a little bit of weight before the spawn. You know, they get really aggressive as far as like being territorial, mm-hmm. getting something, you know, hey, you need to get out of my way. A lot of times that's kind of what you're looking for, is a reaction bite. 50% of the eats on streamers, a lot of times it's right when you smack it down, and usually that's, you've smacked it down right on its head, and that thing kind of looks up, and it's just an aggressive eat, just slaps it on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, it's been pretty decent out there. It was kind of warm a week or two ago, especially for like this time of year, it was almost touching the 80s, which is pretty hot for this time of year here. And now it's like back down in the 40s, and I think tomorrow it might even get in the 50s. So it might be a little bit warmer day, which can cause some more bugs to come off, which will be nice.
Yeah. For you as the striper enthusiast, when's that popping off the most?
So that really starts in early May, those bigger spawning fish push mm-hmm. up the river, and that's down in Cartersville.
Mm-hmm.
And they're full of eggs, and you can go catch a really big one. You're really hunting that one big one.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a like a 2 week period where they're spawning and they don't eat anything.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, basically all the way up to August, is that the water temperature starts to warm up
mm-hmm.
the end of July, and it kind of shuts them down a little bit. But those like the primo months, I would say, is June and July.
Right.
So not right now, but
we're in brown trout.
Yeah,
right now, and like on a good drift trip for you, do you make decisions about targeting larger fish or numbers, or is it all the same? I mean, how does that work?
It really depends. Like lately, I've been using like just a big stone, keeping a big stone fly on my rig, and then using what's working off the back of that. You'll catch some smaller rainbows on that back fly, and then usually I'm keeping that you know, stone fly on there. That the past two big fish I've had out there have eaten the stone fly.
Okay.
So it's kind of one of those, you leave it on there and kind of, yeah. You know, you throw that in enough holes, it'll
But geographically, you're not doing anything different, right?
Not really. You know, you know, a lot of, especially it depends on the weather. Some days you'll find some of those big fish just out and about, you know, mm-hmm. kind of moving around. You may spook them with the boat. You may, and then there's days where, you know, you're not seeing them at all, but you're still catching those smaller fish. So mm-hmm. it's not like the fish have been, you know, pushed around, but those big fish, they're just kind of acting a little bit different. You know, they're either trying to tuck away or they're out and about feeding.
Mm. Back to me visualizing our day tomorrow. Talk to me about your boat and how you have it set up.
So I actually just got this boat this past September, which came in just in time for being busy in the fall. I had a Clackacraft LP. It was Andy's boat starting out, and so this is my first season in my own boat, which is really nice. Main thing I got that boat for was I'm a tall dude, you know, I'm about 6'4". That's a boat you can fit me with a cooler in front of me, and the Clacka, you can't really do that. And so it's been a lot nicer on that aspect, but also the Tacoa is generally a shallow river, you know, so skiff style boats really work out pretty well. Being able to kind of sneak through some of those riffles or, you know, little rock gardens that's out there. I like to tell people it's like you can just barely get a boat down this thing, besides like a raft. And so having that, you know, extra inch of clearance is really nice. And so I've loved it so far. But that and also it's nice open layout. You know, it's nice to be able to have your boat bags, you know, to your left or right instead of right in front of you.
Do you take Drew out a lot just to try to get brownie points with him?
He hadn't even been in the boat yet.
I haven't been in his boat. I have not been in his boat yet.
Oh, man. He's just kind of more of a sitting on the dock with a
got my cane pole out.
But, you know, so going into this, I think for me, it's kind of like growing up in Florida. You know, I would come up with my dad to, you know, a couple areas around Pigeon Forge, and would do like the smallmouth thing, which I really liked, on conventional tackle with like topwater and, you know, different types of crankbait type things. And then we would sometimes he would always do fly fishing kind of up in the streams and in the parks and stuff. And I did that a little bit. But for somebody from Florida, you know, like we love to fish. We get a chance to fish in a lot of different environments because our different species are coming through. You're in different water depths. You got different tides. Sometimes you're over sand and sometimes you're in, you know, Spartina grass and all this stuff. And so you cut your teeth down in salt water and you come up here. And I hung out with Andy after we recorded and we snuck on a little creek for 30-40 minutes and I had a huge trout come up, and I just, when I went to strip set him, and just snapped them right off instantly. And you know, so from my background, you know, it's grew up and have fished my whole life. You know, dad worked FWC and guides, so, you know, got a good base on me. And I come up here and, you know, I'm working with people who are teaching me as somebody who has a fishing background. But I'm guessing that most people that you guys are working with here, you know, they're going from ground zero. What's the breakdown? This is probably a better question for Drew. What's the breakdown between people who are traveling here with a good fishing foundation and they just want to do something different? And, you know, you know, walked by the store and I thought this might be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, so you kind of said it. What would you say, like 75% of the people we have are from Florida.
Okay.
So they are used to catching those bigger,
okay,
stronger fish, really. So yeah, that happens a lot where we get somebody on a big trout and it breaks them off because we're using like 4-pound test. Mm-hmm. You really got to let those fish run, because if you don't and you treat them like a bass, and they'll break off 9 times out of 10. But from people that are looking to get into it and people that are doing it more of like, oh, I'm on vacation, I want to go fishing, they really kind of start off in the same spot if they've never fly fished before, or really fly fished for trout, because it's totally different. So yeah, we just take them out and get them trained up and dangerous enough to get out there. And really, if you're like me, I'm one of those people that you can throw all the information at me you can, but if I'm not actually doing it, then I'm not going to remember any of it. So we give them all a little rundown at the beginning, and then it's really repetitive in the way that you're casting. So naturally, if you're doing it correctly and you keep doing it, you're just going to get a little bit better. And sometimes it takes a couple fish before they're like, okay, I need to really do this next time. And then it's hard to say how many people have not caught a fish and been like, I don't like this, because they all love it. So yeah. They get addicted instantly almost.
You know, Drew, one of the things, we've been coming here to Cohutta probably three years. We've been kind of been coming up this way. And one of the things that really interests me is like, it, you know, you have the shop with all the stuff in it, and you have this opportunity to bring people along. You know, you have the schools, you take somebody out there, you give them a guided trip, they enjoy the experience, they want to get more involved in it. you know, as a guide on saltwater, a lot of times people get on our boats and we fish them, and we try to teach them a little bit, you know, as much as we have the time. But you can pull up the different leaders and tippets and fly lines. You have them right here in the store. You can go through that process and create a pretty good base of information to help bring them along before they develop a lot of bad habits. That really appeals to me from our dealings with Cohodta, because you have the shop, you got the guide service, he's doing international travel. How many guides do y'all have working here?
Seven.
Seven?
Something like that.
Yeah, something like seven.
Oh, that just appeals to me, you know, because somebody says, man, how do I get into that? You know, if they get on my boat, I can give them a little bit of this, and I can talk about a little bit about that, but really I don't have time to get into the details where y'all have that kind of worked out through the schools. That's, I mean, that's encouraging to me.
The pace is different too, because you're wading in the water with somebody and you got a nice little section of water you're reading. All right, let's try that again. Whereas like, we're like, okay, here's a double haul. Okay, no, that's not it. Okay, there's a fish at 10. He's at 10:39. He's at 11. He's out of range. Don't worry about it. We'll find another one for you. You know,
it's very interesting too, because like Hunter came up here and told you about that big fish he had. He strip set on. You know, on the coast.
Exactly what I was supposed to do.
That's right. That's what we say down there. Yeah. You strip set and pray. That's what we say on tarpon. Strip set and pray.
Don't do that tomorrow.
No. We do the opposite thing. We say we get on people for trout set, you know, with a big fish. But it's just very interesting. And I think what's really cool to me, and I mean, I've caught a lot of fish and feel very blessed about that, what I do. But I still love a mountain trout on a dry fly.
Oh yeah, it's a.
He doesn't have to be, or a brook, a little brook.
Oh yeah. Anytime you see him come up and eat something off the surface, it fires you up.
And sometimes you get several, multiple shots at them. You know, they'll come up and they'll miss. And I found that in the past, especially getting older, that it takes me a couple of days a lot of times just to get right on my sets. You know, my reaction time is down. Yeah, and my reaction time down and if these fish, if that water's low and you got to go with smaller tippet, you know, you can break that tippet so easy if you don't do it right, you know. But I enjoy it. I told Hunter one time, if I could leave you anything, it would be dry fly fishing trout in the mountains, because it's beautiful. It's beautiful where you're at, the experience, how you have to pace yourself. You know, so, you know, I mean, it's cool. A tarpon's off. But, man, that trout's got something special to it, too, man. So, you know, I think that's a cool thing.
Oh, yeah. It's sweet. And back to what you were saying, too, it's nice to take people out and realize that they're getting interested into it, and then bring them back into the shop and get them all set up with everything they need to use. We have a lot of people that just started fly fishing a couple of years ago. Now they travel with us to Louisiana or Baja, Mexico, the Bahamas. And it's really cool to see their progress through it, where they started off originally and then to where they're at now. Because, like I said, everybody gets addicted to it, and it's some people more than others.
So many people are intimidated by it. You know, I mean, I was a kid when I had a fly rod the first time, and I had a little sponge spider, and I was on a lake, and it was cool. But it can be intimidating, when you start talking about all the different, you know, we make it complicated. It's just fishing.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there's some skill level involved in it, and you can get better, and you can bring yourself as far as you want to bring yourself, but it's still just fishing. You know, so it's kind of a cool thing to, what I like about this whole setup is that, you know, when you talk about something, I mean, we're kidding about the dungeon, but what a cool place, man, just down here below the shop, the wood, the pictures, the memories. The bourbon. But it's also so cool that you can take somebody up there and say, you know, when we talk about, you know, this kind of a fly, this is it. You want to talk about a size 22? You want to talk about an 8, a 6? Look, you know, you want to talk about tipping materials, ways to carry things? So you can kind of take a person from, man, this is cool, I've always dreamed about doing it, to really having a deep understanding of everything used in it.
For sure.
I like that.
Yeah, I like coming into a different fishing culture, too, on the freshwater thing. Like, y'all's beards are a little more groomed. They look a little nicer.
Yeah.
You guys like stickers more. What's the over-under? What do you think? How many stickers does Drew have on his truck right now?
I think he got probably four.
Four?
Including the rod vault, maybe like 8.
All right.
I bet he doesn't have any coffee stickers. No coffee stickers.
No coffee. All right. How many does Matt have on his?
One.
Man, I was trying to make
it. Better be a Kohutta. It better be a Kohutta.
It's amazing that there's not more vehicle accidents with freshwater trout guys with how many stickers they put on the back of their car. They got, if they buy a product, there's like, if they buy a pair of Snippers, they're going to have a sticker about their Snippers on the truck. You know what I mean? If they drink a cup of coffee somewhere, they're going to have that coffee shop sticker. So that's just like, and I mean, that's in the saltwater scene too, and in the fishing community. But it is fun to get around folks who are shaped a little differently. You know, the primary leaders in some of the brands are different. The materials used are obviously different, and I think it's really fun to just immerse myself in a different little bit of a different culture and community, and enjoy and try to learn from what are some of those things that have really shaped mountain people.
Mm-hmm.
I do love Georgia too. I'm curious, you know, you were talking about when you take a client who, because you guys, so in the saltwater game, maybe if you have a team of guides, as a client progresses, they might get a chance to get openings and opportunities with more experienced guides who are higher up in the pecking order. But for, you know, there are some saltwater fly shops and saltwater outfitter shops that have full service just like here. But for you, I'm curious, as because you guys get to walk with people through so many different environments and fishing settings, on y'all's end, you can sit down on a whiteboard and say, here's what we do to try to help people get from, I've never casted a fly rod, to a rooster, you know? Mm-hmm. But I'm curious, like, what's the DNA of a client or a person who you meet them and you spend a little time with them and you go, this person is going to progress and do well? What are, like, some of the DNA markers that you guys see?
Yeah, so I would say, honestly, is somebody that's willing to listen. Because you get it a lot of times where you have somebody that's, because I'm 27, how old are you, Matt?
24,
that are a little bit older than us and have, like, let's say, background in bass fishing, mm-hmm. all right, with conventional rods. And because they're a little bit older than you, they're not really, they want to just kind of question everything you're saying rather than going, okay, maybe I should do this. So people that are willing to listen and then apply that's where they'll find the most success.
About women. I mean, I see women on the boat sometimes, and they have no experience, but by the end of the day, they fish well.
They always do. Yep.
They really always do. You know, sometimes you got people, it's not that they're not willing to listen, just people like my dad, they're not able to listen. You know, they're hard to hear it. It doesn't hear you. You know?
Yeah.
You know. Old people jokes. The old people jokes.
One thing I like about it is, like, just like whether it's like watching a fish just come up on a dry fly or watching a fish come out and crush a streamer, just like showing someone like something that you may see on it. It's not like an everyday basis, but you see pretty often. It doesn't really surprise you as much anymore. But when you see someone new that's coming into it, and, you know, especially in the summertime when fish are eating like terrestrials, you know, hoppers, beetles, ants, stuff like that. And you see those fish slowly come up to it and they're looking at it and then they slowly sip it, just like watching the whole thing go down. And having someone that's there, like, that has never seen that before and is watching that all there with you, and it just geeks them out. And they're like, that was awesome. You know, mm-hmm. just watching someone get as thrilled about it as you used to be, and it almost makes you even, man, just as much, if not more, thrilled than them.
You know, I don't care how many fish I've caught. Sometimes I'm like, oh, my God, he just ate it.
Yeah.
Can you believe he just ate that?
Yeah. You get a ton of situations like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had the other day, I was fishing with a friend of mine over by my house, and we had a black drum come up on a flat, and he was making a beeline. He wasn't, like, tailing on oysters or anything like that. And we didn't have what we would consider the right fly for a black drum. There was some shrimp around, so we had, like, a little shrimp fly on. We threw this little shrimp fly in front of this black drum that was, I mean, he was cruising about as fast as I've ever seen a black drum cruise, and he came right behind it and charged it just like a redfish would. And both of us were, you know, shocked, like we had never, you know, seen a fish eat before, because you just sometimes just you're not expecting it, you know, whether it's a species thing or whether you've just dealt with a bunch of picky fish that day or somebody makes a bad cast, but it's the right fish with the bad cast or whatever. And I think for me, it's, you know, to all those different environments, like I love red fishing and I love triple tail fishing, which we've done with Andy and stuff down by us. But to me, it's like going in all those different environments. And I don't think I've caught a freshwater trout in a year and a half because I just don't do it very much, you know? And I don't truthfully prioritize it very much. Just happen to be up here for Thanksgiving. And so to me, I'm looking forward to a day on the water doing something totally different and trying to, you know, Matt, are you a yeller? Are you going to yell at me tomorrow? You don't seem like a yeller. Yeah.
Not at all. I'm usually pretty calm.
Pretty calm. But we'll see.
Watch you mess up and be like, oh, there it was.
Yeah. Yeah, that was it. Okay.
Don't worry, man. You'll get it on the next one.
So, you know, we're fishing tomorrow. We're doing the, we're doing the Tocoa. Mm-hmm. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
We're doing the
Tocoa.
I'm going to say it anyway. And we're drift fishing. But here, there's a couple things I think that are interesting just to wade into a little bit of water here. You guys have, I think the private water thing's really interesting. And I would imagine controversial. Yes? No?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can own water in Georgia, technically.
Yeah.
You own the land. You don't own the water. Land
under the water.
So the access to it is
but
probably
a lot
tough.
Of states, you can, a lot of states, like, you know, you might not be able to get out of the stream.
You know,
yeah, you can legally float through it. Okay. But as soon as you touch a rock or fish, then you're trespassing.
Yeah, okay. So there's no access to some of that, which is interesting to me. I was going to say that, you know, when we put the GPS trolling motors on our boats, it changed a whole lot of things for us on saltwater. You know, because a lot of times if I was having to motor the boat, you know, I was busy as a captain trying to work. But when I could put that GPS trolling motor and I didn't have to work about motoring that boat, I could get next to that client. And really coach and talk to them and develop a relationship. I wasn't having to worry about staying on a spot or working, you know, that boat, which you're doing on a drift. You got to worry some. You got to maneuver that boat where they go on these private waters and can wade. Man, that's a lot of one-on-one attention.
It's
right there to be able to help you work through your cast.
Untangle
talk
my
to
knots.
You. Yeah. Yeah.
Retie my fly.
Get your fly of out of the tree.
Hold my beer.
But all that is, I think that's kind of a cool feature too, mm-hmm. because to be able to do that, which is different than the float mm-hmm. trips, I'm sure.
The floats, you can just drop anchor.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a nice thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But I know you're going to work hard for us tomorrow. Yeah. Yeah, you're going to be trying to jockey us into positions, getting our hunter's flies out of the trees.
For sure, out of the trees.
But I like that with Cohutta, that you have those different levels that you can walk somebody through. I really think I think it would be a cool thing. Like, I think about some of our clients, you know, that we built relationship, father, sons, and stuff like that. I think that's a really cool thing to be able to take somebody, because I'm intimidated, man. I don't know how to fly fish. My boy's really starting to get into it, but I don't know how to do it. Well, you can fix that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can walk them all the way through that process. That's cool.
Yeah, that was like a good little plug for Drew. Drew's eyes lit up a little bit. He's like, hey, call me now. Yeah, I think like the private water thing and then all the controversy around wild and stocked and all that. Tell me from your personal view, how do you try to think through all that? Is that something that people don't talk a lot about in freshwater world, or is it something that people talk a ton about? Because I know in saltwater, with stocking programs and habitat restoration, all that, it's controversial.
Yeah, to me, and you tell me if you mm-hmm. disagree, but I think it's way cooler when somebody catches a 10-inch wild fish than like a 20-inch stocked fish.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens. But I mean, it's good for people to learn on for sure. Mm-hmm. But the wild fish, I would definitely say, is a lot more rewarding.
Yeah, it's fun too. Like you hook like you said, a 10-inch wild fish. It'll fight just as hard as just about a, you know, stocked fish, you know, 3/4 of its size. And so also just kind of the look of them, they're just a lot better looking usually. A lot cooler colors. Sometimes they're darker. Sometimes they got just more enhanced colors like reds on them. But also, you know, that 10-inch stocked or 10-inch wild fish is going to be just as educated as a holdover fish that's mm-hmm. been in there a little bit. But that holdover fish may be 20 inches, and it was stocked at maybe 12. It's gotten 20 and got educated through that point. But a 10-inch wild fish, every bit as smart of it.
Are there big fights within the trout fishing community over people trying to stop stocking programs and or
no, has not ever really, because you still need that, because I mean, a lot of people will come up here and come into the shop, and just ask him where they can go catch a fish that they can cook and eat it themselves, because a lot of people come up here and want to eat a trout. They want to be part of the mountain life, I guess you would say. So you
is
do
that a sticker on your truck? Mountain
no, you won't see any of those stickers on my thing. Me and a buddy have a thing about that. We try to find the wildest whatever life stickers and send them to each other. But yeah, so you really do need those stockings, just because a lot of fish will die. If the water temperature does get too warm during the summer, they will die off. So nobody wants to go fish in a river that doesn't have any fish in it. And then, like Matt was saying, you'll get one of those stockfish that does grow over and is that, like, holdover fish. And they're just as educated as the wild fish. So you really do need those stocking programs. Whether it's striper in a lake that will run up the river to spawn eventually, or those trout in the stream that you need on the DH.
All right, a little bit of a topic shift here, because I'm sure that you're saying that people don't debate it. I'm sure I'll have 10 DMs of people ready to debate. So I'll direct them your way. I'll tell them to talk to the guide service manager here. And no, but so, you know, one day I'd love to have some sort of travel show, because when I go into different places, I like to eat. I like to try different, you know, desserts and drinks and foods, and y'all got a little pinball place right over here.
Yeah.
Unlimited pinball, which I sent a photo to my buddy Vince DeGura from Skinny Water Culture, who is deep into the pinball subculture, which is a thing.
Oh, he'd have fun over there.
Oh, he would have fun. I can't wait to bring him up here. I'm going to bring him up here for a gift or something. But yeah, I'm curious, so off the water, Blue Ridge, how do you do it right? Where are you eating, drinking, playing?
Man,
hardest part's finding what's open here. Yeah. To be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, being such like a town that runs off of so much tourism, you get so many places that are closed Tuesday, Wednesday, even Thursday, and then, you know, you find a lot of places that stay open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you know, through the weekend when there's a lot of traffic around. Which I think a lot of that's just staffing issues. But you know, there are a few places that'll stay open, like, you know, weekday nights. You know, like a couple of my favorite places, Misty Mountain Hops, awesome, just little bar kind of up the road. The Dogwood's really cool. Black Sheep, kind of a cool date night place.
Lamb Lollipops.
Yeah.
Lamb Lollipops. Oh, yeah. I think I'm going to Black Sheep tomorrow.
I ate there yesterday. Sorry, you're not going tomorrow.
No, I'm
How are you?
No, I think that I'm going tomorrow. You got a date? I think my mom's going to watch kids, and my wife and I might try to get a reservation there, because I'm going to tell them I know Drew. Guys are just putting on a staff.
What about Grumpy Old Man? Is that still open?
Grumpy Old Man's good. Yeah, that's one of the breweries.
I relate with that, man. I relate with that. But
I wish I liked beer more. Like, I mean, I drink beer, but I like, you know, like, right. I'll probably show up on the boat with Busch Light or something like that.
Good,
you know?
Natty Light. Oh, that's all you need, man.
But I wish, like, you know, I wish I liked it even more, but I can still appreciate going somewhere and trying something that somebody's proud of. I mean, what about, where are you eating around town?
Black Sheep, like he said, but honestly, if it's late night, a really good hole in the wall is the Blue Coyote. And Jacob, our manager, is not going to like that answer, but it's a good dive bar. It's a really good dive bar.
Why won't he like it?
He just doesn't like it. No. I don't know what it is.
That's how those craft beer guys are. They just don't like anything, you know.
That one's right next door to us too.
Yeah. What about
That's the last stop of the night.
Yeah, the last stop. You don't start there.
Mm-hmm. Don't start there at the Blue Coyote. They got karaoke there that you.
Yeah,
I think it's Tuesdays. Is it Tuesdays?
It's Tuesdays.
Okay, so yeah. I know when not to go. Not too many American Idols coming out of Blue Ridge, Georgia. I can tell you that much. Where else? What are some other good places? If, you know, doesn't have to necessarily be food, but if you were putting together a list of things for us to do, what would you steer us towards?
You could go hiking. There's a ton of trails around here.
Probably wouldn't do it right now, but like you're about 45 minutes from two really good, just like whitewater rivers, you know, like the Toccoa, once it crosses into Tennessee, it turns into the Ocoee. That's a really cool whitewater river that, you know, you kind of explore and see some stuff that, you know, you're not just sitting there fishing. I mean, they're cool rivers. Nantahala, that's another one. That one's up in North Carolina, and that's a good one too. Like, you go up there, maybe do a whitewater trip in the morning, and then in the afternoon there's, you know, a stretch of delayed harvest river that you could fish just above the rapting section there, and go over there and catch a couple fish before you head back.
Where are you staying? My dad brought his Airstream up here. Lodging wise, you're at a campsite.
Morganton Point.
And you said that's nice over by it. Nice. I haven't been over there yet.
Yeah, Blue Ridge, they've got it drawn down. Winter drawdown, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe. It's even lower right now just because they're doing some work on the dam. I don't know exactly what it is. From what I heard, it's something on the lower unit. So they're not doing, like, usually you have a high water and a low water. Basically, low water being 150 CFS, high water's 1,500. Right now they're just doing a constant flow of 400 CFS, and with as little rain as we've had, the river or the lake is actually even crazy. Like, from what I've heard, you can't even put in some of the boat ramps.
So yeah, I would say so. I walked out there, and yeah, when I was walking, I walked around the lake at the water's edge. You know, of course, that is probably down, I'm guessing, 20-30 feet. I don't know, but you could walk out on the points and you could see the fish beds still on the points where the fish had bedded during the season. And pretty cool. And then there's all the brush piles out there sticking, you know, with concrete blocks and trees tied to them on dry ground, you know. But it's
I'm gonna strap a rod on and take one of the electric bikes out and try to,
there you go,
find something. It's low tide.
Low tide.
He likes low tide.
The less water, the less water.
Does that lake even get fish like now?
Yeah, you can definitely go catch some bass out there.
Crappie, probably. They got crappie. Yeah. I mean, that's what's the, bass, what are the brush piles or crappie?
There's walleye in there too.
Walleye, see?
That's what I want to catch.
That's all my. Some in the river. I've not caught a walleye yet. I've not caught a walleye.
I've seen a couple in the river that's made my jaw drop. Like, I saw one about 2 weeks ago. I looked down at the bottom, and if I didn't know any better, I would have thought it was a striper. It was so big. I was kind of like, what is that?
Man, I tried to catch one in August and I did, in Arkansas in April, and I didn't. But that's on my list, man. Johnny.
I'll probably sight fish one today off the e-bike with my
Just go over there by the dam, above the dam, and drop it down deep.
Yeah, but and I'm staying at an Airbnb. I'll put links to all the stuff we're talking about, but I'm staying at a nice Airbnb, so it's got. It's got a little fire pit and everything, and it's definitely a great place, I think, to take a family up here. Y'all have an awesome downtown park. My little kids went there and played at that. Y'all got some sort of Santa train experience that I'm missing.
Y'all got it. Yeah. What y'all need is some wineries.
Play Santa, or
that's Andy.
That white beard.
Andy's got that big white beard, but he's a little slim for you. He looks like slim fast Santa Claus. Yeah. You know? Body positive. Man, this is such a great place, man. I appreciate y'all for hanging out with us. We're looking forward to getting on the water and enjoying Blue Ridge. It's becoming a more regular spot for us. So thanks for carving out some time.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Appreciate you having us.